Chapter 29 Sunday, 2:31 p.m. A very long hour later, Lucy was shuffling down the hallway, wearing scrubs with no bra, her own underwear, shoes and socks, and Walden's windbreaker. She'd almost made her escape to freedom when the nurse chased her down, a clipboard and metal tray in her hands. Walden and Burroughs stood on either side of her, watching as the nurse rattled off Lucy's discharge instructions, made her sign 23 different forms in triplicate, handed her a small bottle of Tylenol with codeine, and a prescription for antibiotics. Finally, she unveiled the contents of the tray. "Almost forgot your tetanus booster, Agent Guardino." The black spots in Lucy's vision returned along with a thundering in her ears. If the guys hadn't been there, she would have treated herself to a nice case of the vapors, her usual reaction to needles. Damn it, why couldn't they have done it while she was out cold when they stuck her with the IVs? "Wouldn't want to forget that," she mumbled. Her face was cold and clammy. From the looks on Burroughs and Walden's faces, they were in total sympathy. She handed the papers and bottles to Walden, painfully slid one arm free of the windbreaker, swallowed hard, and vowed not to faint. The nurse didn't even move them into a patient space. Instead, she briskly dabbed some alcohol on Lucy's upper arm and jabbed the needle in before anyone could say boo. Even smiled while she did it, Lucy saw as her vision swam out of focus for a moment. Both of the men looked away. Scaredy cats. It was over fast, and before she knew it, Lucy was boasting a Bugs Bunny Band-Aid, and the nurse had helped her back into the jacket. "There. You're good to go." "Where's Taylor? I want to see him before we leave." Walden answered. "Over here." She followed the men across the hall to the orthopedics room. Her back felt bruised and tight and swollen, like it was being held together by fishing line, which, the surgeon had explained, was basically the truth of the matter. Nylon on top of the skin, and something called chromic, which he said was like old-fashioned catgut, only better, in a few layers of muscle and connective tissue below the surface. One wrong move, and his sewing project could pop wide open again. Her skin felt stretched so tight that she wondered if it might not be better just to let the metal remain, weld it closed or something. Then she saw Taylor and counted herself lucky.
"Hi, LT. Did they get you, too?"
he said, his pupils constricted and dancing as he held a black rubber mask to his face and sucked on it greedily. His arm looked awful, fingers caught tight in a cage-like contraption straight out of a Fu Manchu movie, a weight pulling his elbow down, the S-shaped curve of his broken arm bones slowly being straightened out by a surgeon covered with flecks of plaster and frayed bits of fiberglass. "Wow, Taylor," she said, taking his good hand in hers. "You'll do anything for a few days off."
"Can't feel a thing. They numbed my whole arm up and gave me lots of drugs.
Good drugs."
"Nitrous oxide," the surgeon corrected as he realigned the bones with a grating noise that made Lucy's eyes bug wide in sympathy. "He wouldn't let us give him anything long-acting. Said he needed to get back to work."
"You catch the bastard yet?"
Taylor's words were slurred and his eyelids drooped. "Not yet. We're headed out now. You going to be okay?"
"Oh, sure. I'm fine."
He sang the last, his eyes now completely shut. Lucy squeezed his hand and backed away.
"He really going to be all right?" she asked the surgeon.
"Yeah, this looks awful, but they usually heal with no problems. He'll have a cast for the next 2 months. In fact, soon as I'm finished and get a follow-up x-ray, he'll be ready to go." Satisfied that Taylor was in good hands, she followed Burroughs to where his car was parked in the no-parking zone closest to the ER doors. He'd left his wigwags going, the blue and red lights flashing from behind the Impala's grill, bathing the brick light in color.
"You sure you don't want me to take you home?"
he asked, holding the passenger door open for her.
"You should get some rest."
Resentment flared through her. No one would ever question one of the guys returning to work. Why did they assume she was any different? She'd rest when they found Ashley.
Get me back to the office. She eased her weight down into the seat, wincing as she twisted to pull the seatbelt tight. Burroughs pulled out of the hospital drive and turned onto Penn. He drove just like yesterday, relaxed, one wrist draped over the wheel, exuding confidence. That reporter, Ames, she broke up your marriage, didn't she? He slid one hand to fist the wheel at the 11 o'clock position as he slanted his gaze at her. After that stunt with Danny and Mitch, yeah. She's still hassling your daughter? I can handle that if you want. Right. He'd love nothing more than to handle TV girl again. No. I meant your affair with her. That's what broke up your marriage, right? Now both hands gripped the wheel tight. But his face was expressionless as he stared at her. You're kidding me. You think I... She was too tired to play this game. Flipping his phone open, she waved the text message in front of him. Answer me one question, Burroughs. How badly have you fucked my case? The car swerved slightly. He started to smile, a phony, hey, this is all a joke, right? Smile. She merely glared at him, refusing to look away. Then he gave a one-shouldered shrug of surrender, and the boyish grin vanished.
Cindy and I... We hooked up about a year ago, when the Olson case came along and I was primary. I didn't give her what she wanted, so she pulled that stunt with my kids.
Answer my question, Burroughs.
I didn't tell her anything. That's what I'm trying to explain. This thing between us, it's some kind of warped chemistry. I don't know what. But I would never, ever jeopardize a case.
You'd jeopardize your marriage, but not the job? She didn't try to bother to keep the scorn from her voice.
Yes. No. Kim and I were having trouble long before I met Cindy. Look, this doesn't have to be a bad thing. We could use it to our advantage. Leak a story to Cindy. Use it to bait Fletcher.
Lucy was already way ahead of him there. It might come to that. In the meantime, I'm going to ask one thing from you. If you can't do it, tell me now. His Adam's apple bobbed as he swallowed.
What is it?
You don't talk with Ames. You don't go near her. You don't fuck her again until we have Ashley safe. Ignoring traffic for a moment, he swiveled his head to meet her eyes with an altar boy innocent gaze. He nodded solemnly.
Sure. The kid comes first.
She couldn't help but notice he had stopped using Ashley's name. Hey, wake up. You're safe now. Everything is going to be all right. The world circled around her consciousness like fluffy summer clouds, thin and wispy and impossible to grasp. It was a man's voice, that much penetrated. He was holding her, rocking her like she was a baby. Here, drink this. Slowly now, slowly. A trickle of fluid ran down her chin. More sloshed down her throat, gagging her. She jerked up, coughing, her eyes springing open. Dark spots danced before her eyes. Everything was shadowy. The man held her in his lap. She couldn't see his face. He held a water bottle back up to her lips, and she drank. He started to pull it away, and she grabbed it.
Nope, don't drink too fast. You'll get sick.
She didn't fight. Instead, lowered her hand to her lap, waited for him to make the next move. I need to get some tools from my truck to cut you loose. He slid her from his lap onto the hard ground. In the distance, she saw a mound of snakes, dark, hovering around the periphery of her vision. Terrified, she grabbed his pant leg, not looking up at him, her gaze focused on the snakes.
Don't worry. They won't hurt you. I'll be right back.
She wrapped her arm around his leg, anchoring herself. He crouched low, gently loosening her grip.
It's all right. You're safe now. Trust me.
Then he was gone, and she was alone again. Trust him? The words were meaningless. The only things that had meaning in her universe were the threat of the snakes, the impending horror of being left in the darkness again,
the headlong terror she felt with every breath. She drew her knees up, hugging her legs to her, making herself the smallest target possible. Without moving her head, she glanced around her prison. It was a barn. Overturned buckets hung from hooks in the rafters above her. The source of the snakes, she guessed. But where was the man who had put them there? Who had brought her here? Snakes slithered around bales of hay stacked to make walls. The only light came from a door open at one end of the small barn. More bales obscured it. All she could see was the bright light framed at the top of the opening. On the other side of the barn, the hay bales were stacked to make seats. Her fingers spread out into claws, fighting terror as she saw her audience. Three vaguely human forms sat there, snakes crawling over them, making the plastic they were encased in rustle as if they were alive. They weren't alive. Panic seized her, her heart speeding into a furious rhythm that threatened to strangle her. She scuttled back as far as the chain would stretch, kept going, not caring about the snakes or anything except getting far away from the three bodies. She rolled over onto her belly, lunging for the doorway, the promise of freedom. The chain yanked her back, her ankles screaming for mercy. She stretched out, clawing her hands against the linoleum that extended only a few inches past her reach. Where was the man, her savior? He had promised. As if in answer to her silent prayers, he appeared again, a tall shadow ringed by light. "Miss me?" he said brightly, brandishing a large pair of bolt cutters. He immediately went to work on the cable restraining her. "This might hurt a bit." She said nothing, simply lay there, face down, snakes slithering over her limp hands, ignoring the pain as he pried one jaw of the tool beneath the restraint. There was pressure, a lot of pressure, then a snapping sound. His hands worked at her ankle. She lay still, waiting. "You're free. Think you can walk?" She said nothing, puzzling over his words, waiting to see what happened next, what new torture was coming. "Maybe I should carry you." With a grunt of effort, he rolled her over and scooped her into his arms. He swayed beneath her weight, and she saw that he really wasn't all that tall. He carried her through the maze of hay bales and out into the bright sunlight. The light burnt her eyes. She almost cried out, but stopped herself in time. Instead, she closed her eyes tight and buried her face into his shoulder. "Sorry I didn't get here sooner," he said, balancing her weight as he shut the barn door. "What's your name?"
"I'm Jim."
She burrowed deeper into his shirt, trying to escape the harsh judgment of the sun. What was her name? Good question. The answer seemed meaningless. A name didn't matter. Who she was didn't matter, just as long as she didn't have to return to the darkness. Floating. She was a lazy cloud, floating. Unfettered, untethered, unleashed. Free to float. As if looking down from a great height, she saw the figure of a man carrying a dark-haired girl. Both strangers to her, but she felt sympathy for him as he stumbled, almost tripped, and caught himself. Watched as the girl tightened her grip around his neck. Safe. She was safe in his arms. Knowing that, seeing that, was more than enough. She didn't need answers. She only needed to float. Free. "Vixen," she finally answered. "Call me Vixen." For some reason, that made the man laugh. Not at her. More as if he'd won some prize. He hugged her tight, his laughter rippling through him, acting as if she were something special, precious. "All right, then, Vixen," he finally said. "Let's get you someplace safe and sound."